All right, welcome back to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Film, the ones and twos, wearing his headphones and his Brink Brewing cap. We're here in studio, 312 Elm Street. And Sherry, how are you?
Good morning. I'm good. Good.
Good morning.
What's this week? This week's just been like the president's coming to visit at Mount St. Joe.
Yeah, and we talked about, like, do we want to talk about the president coming? But as you're going to be listening to this, he has already been here. So we're recording this before he's here. And so
today's the day. Yeah.
Today's the day. He comes later tonight, whereas we record on Wednesday. So we figure, you know, just check Cincinnati.com and Sherry's Twitter feed and Scott Wortman's Twitter feed. And that's where you can figure out what the president said in Cincinnati. But let me, before we jump into our political segment, I want to make sure stick around, folks, because our guest today is the managing partner of 4EG Restaurant and Bar Group, Bob Deck, who I'm really excited to talk to him because it's a fascinating world of starting and keeping and maintaining restaurants and bars in the past year, and certainly huge story. And it's exciting to – it looks like they're growing because we know there's a new – Pilar is the name of the bar coming on the new Court Street – what do we call it? Courtyard?
It's the Court Street Plaza. Court Street pedestrian plaza. Plaza where you can walk.
In downtown, where the new downtown Kroger is, that area, where the Kroger corporate offices are. And so 4EG is opening a new place there very soon. And we'll talk to Bob about that and some of their other growth and other opportunities and them being a part of revitalization of downtown and over the Rhine. And we'll go from there. But first, this is our political segment where we'd like to talk a little bit about a hot political topic, typically locally or state. And this week, Sherry.
It's a topic a long time in the making. Jason really first introduced us to it in his columns. Great Parks of Cincinnati are looking to make some improvements to their parks with a levy that they're going to put to voters in November. And this is a levy that, you know, they thought was going to be something last year, and it's been through a couple revisions, which Jason's going to tell us about. And so we are, you know, in the coming days, we're going to really hear like the final details of it.
Yeah. As you're listening to this, the decision may have already been made, but I think it's a foregone conclusion. The Parks Board, the Great Parks Board of Hamilton County, is expected to vote on Thursday to put a levy on the ballot this fall. Be a property tax increase to increase funding for the great parks across the county. I give a lot of credit to Todd Palmiter, who is the CEO of Great Parks. You know, last year, they really, I mean, I'm trying to put this diplomatically, but they really dropped the ball and was very tone deaf and just came out without any kind of community engagement and said, oh, we're going to go for this huge levy. Well, now they're coming back, and I've done a lot of homework on this. I've talked to a lot of people. They're still coming back with – they're going to go for a lower levy than what they were asking last year. They've done some engagement. They've engaged the business community, which is good, and have asked for their input.
And there's been a lot said about what projects need to get done.
But I'm still a little concerned. There isn't a set plan. There's still a lot of questions about wants versus needs. And I think there you could still make the argument there's some tone deafness here. I don't think it's a good idea to go for any kind of a property tax increase right now at a time when inflation is crazy, gas prices, milk, groceries, lumber, like everything is more expensive right now. And the last thing I think people want to have to deal with, especially in a county where the property taxes are already some of the highest in the state, is to now have to have a higher property tax. And in the city of Cincinnati, water rates are getting ready to go up because city council approved that. And it's like every time you turn around, it's like, gosh, can someone get a break here?
Here's the thing about taxes in Hamilton County, and this isn't the case everywhere, but here, everything is on like a staggered schedule. So when you go into the voting booth and you're looking at something, this is, you know, it's to the good of things and the detriment of things, because you're never looking at the whole cost of something, of like, this is what your property tax bill is going to look like. Now, Dusty Rhodes, I will say, is going to put that online. He always has a searchable thing where you can go and check this all out for yourself with your address, which is great. But you got to take that extra step. When you're in the voting booth, you're looking at, well, I use the parks. I love the parks. I'll vote for the parks. Or you're looking at, I want to help children's services, or I want to help the hospital levy, or I want to help, you know, these various organizations that do all make the case, usually leading up to, we'll see a big campaign for the parks. Like, we didn't hear like all of these details like before the vote happened, but I promise you we'll definitely see a huge campaign past the parks levy. That's how that works.
Yes.
So you're just making a decision based on one, but there are many.
Again, I'm looking at this from the public accountability standpoint. It's almost August. It's almost August here, and this decision is being made. And it's like for the ballot in November. And there's been, I had someone tell me earlier this week, like, where has the campaign publicly been to say, you know, hey, look at how great your parks are. Come support the parks. And if you think about it in the grand scheme of things, it's only a few months there between the time they're going to make this decision and the time this is going to be on the ballot. And again, I compare this back to the bus levy last year. From the time that effort started to the time that went on the ballot was almost a 5-year period. And so many people from different walks of life and different pockets of the community, and politicians and business leaders and pastors and nonprofit folks and everyday citizens were all came together to work on that. And I'm not here to argue whether that should have passed or not. But what I'm saying is the effort around that was the way you do a levy. And I'm still not seeing that level of collaboration around the parks. And on the flip side, I say that, and I think Todd Palmeter is a great guy and cares a lot and is a good CEO of the parks. And I think he would admit this, like he learned a lot from last summer. I think he himself has done a good job of going out and trying to make the case and figure out, you know, behind the scenes, like, hey, this is what we're trying to do, and listening. That board is a different story, though. The board of the Great Parks is, there's a lot of politics going on there, and I have a lot of concerns about that board still.
Watch for our reporting on this. Scott Mortman is going to be, covering the day-to-day, what's happening at these meetings. And I think we should look for Jason to weigh in with another column. There's no way there's not another column in this one.
With that, I'm off the soapbox, and let's get on to our special guest. All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and very pleased to welcome to the podcast managing partner of 4EG, Bob Deck. Bob, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much. Great to be on.
You have so many things going on, and just for folks who maybe aren't aware, 4EG owns, operates Igby's, the Lachman, several bars and restaurants around town, and also not in Cincinnati, is that correct?
That is correct. We've operated in Chicago for a long time, and just recently starting to branch into Columbus.
Love it.
You know, when I was writing a budget line for the story about this, I kind of put it this way right at the beginning. I was like, you might not know his name, but you probably have drank one of his drinks if you like to go out or eaten his macaroni and cheese. So
that is true. Yes.
The mac and cheese is Keystone, right?
That is. I guess.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, Bob, tell us. Go ahead.
It's been so popular. We're, you know, the Mac Shack is just one of our places, and it just specifically focuses on the mac and cheese.
Gosh, what?
That's like the dream. I'm not going to lie. What do you do for a living? I own a restaurant that serves only macaroni and cheese.
Bob, what an interesting time for you and the world that you operate in and your livelihood, the restaurant and bar business, and you're still here. You're still here, and that in and of itself is a huge accomplishment and exciting thing. Talk about this past year and what life has been like for someone who owns and operates restaurants and
sure,
bars.
Sure. You know, it was pretty scary. I have to tell you, it was very unknown. Just like everybody else, when the governor went on and, you know, put us kind of on lockdown with, you know, bars and restaurants, both cities, you know, for us. So overnight, it was, you know, we really had no idea what was really going to be the future. And, you know, you can run your business very well and think you're doing all the right things. But when something completely out of your control happens like that, it was shocking, a lot of anxiety and pretty scary time.
So I have to say, I mean, I helped cover when the governor's making that announcement. I live fairly close to downtown. The editors are like, it's a Sunday night. They're like, go downtown, see what's going on, and over the Rhine. And I actually happened to be near the Lackman. And there were people, and they're like, they didn't know. They were like, you know, we're going out one last time. We don't know when we're going to be able to get this. I mean, the Lackman was super busy. Mm-hmm. But just like, and I'm just interviewing all these people are like walking the streets, and they're just like, the uncertainty. And I did talk to like some of the bartenders at the various places. I mean, this was their living too. And it was just, I mean, I think it's going to be like a moment I remember my whole life of like the uncertainty of like things are closing tomorrow, like our life. And so I can't imagine like being responsible for all of that.
Yeah, it was, you know, I'm thinking right now as you're saying it, and it's kind of, you know, just bringing back some memories of just those first couple of days were just very bizarre, and just closing things down. I remember, you know, for a period of time, you know, going in and checking on our buildings and our places, and it was a spooky time for all this. And COVID was so unknown. I mean, we've gotten so much more information that at least, you know, we understand it a little better, but. You know, for your staff and your employees and all the people that work for you, you know, it wasn't just about me. It was just about our whole organization.
How many bars and restaurants did you own at that point? I know it's very fluid, but what were you looking at that point? Because it's not just the three that we just mentioned. It's a lot.
Right. We have 18, and we had probably about that at that time. We've since closed one, and we didn't renew a lease on another, but then we've also added one recently. So it was just right around there, across four different cities and three different states. So that was the other thing too, is the states were different in terms of what they required or what the regulations were. So that was also something that we continued to have to try to stay up on.
If I were to ask you, I don't know, maybe the turn of the year or late last year, and we were to sit here today a year later after the pandemic, and you say basically you only ended up having to close net-wise one restaurant, would you have said, no way, we're gonna have to close more, or I don't even know if we're going to even be able to stay in business? Or you know, what? Fast forward to your thought process, I don't know, 6-7 months ago to where you're at today.
Yeah, I mean, I was always trying to be optimistic, have a positive attitude towards it. I really didn't know. I thought that we were going to get through it because we were very well organized. We had a team of people that were every day waking up and working on what were the best decisions to do. And so I thought we would get through it. I just didn't know on the other side how bad or you know, it would be, you know, how many places we'd maybe have to close or would be closed temporarily, how many employees we'd have to furlough or, you know, bring back. So that was the big one. But, you know, sitting here today, you know, we got through it. We took a bunch of lumps and we're still, you know, putting a lot of the pieces back together again, even today. Some of our places aren't open 7 days a week yet. We're not open full hours. We're still trying to add some staff back, both in the office, corporate office, and in the location. So we're still in recovery mode.
Mm-hmm.
So where is all the staff? Like, so much has been made of this. I mean, like, where do you think they went that they're not coming, you know, back to these same jobs? I mean, you see this at like every restaurant that you go to. And Keith Pandolfi, the food writer here, is urging everyone to be patient so we can have these restaurants. But it doesn't seem to be getting any better, like, quickly. Where is everybody?
Yeah, well, I think it's I think there's a lot of answers to that. I do think that, you know, some people just flat out had time to think about what their career might want to look like going forward. And some people left the industry altogether. That was especially true in Chicago. We were in Chicago. And all of our places in Chicago, we don't serve food. So we were closed for a long time there. And the longer we were closed, people had to go find work in other, you know, areas. So I think that was a big one. I think, again, it's just, it seems like not even in our industry, I have friends with other businesses that are also trying to find help. And so, I'm not quite sure. I mean, I know that, in the last couple of weeks we've been hiring. So it seems to be getting a little better, you know,
that's great.
But I think at one time too, we didn't really know, you know, you're putting people on the front lines in this industry that are behind the bar or, you know, going out to tables, and they're doing that every day. So I think it was a pretty scary time for them, and people just opted to you know, not come back.
Let's get away from that and tell us a little bit about your story and where you're from and how you ended up getting into the career that you got into. And yeah,
sure.
Tell us about Bob Deck.
In other words, at any time, did you think to yourself, I guess I wish I would have stayed a chiropractor? Here, go ahead. Take us back to the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, going to school, I grew up in Cincinnati, grew up over on the east side of town in Anderson Township. So I have a love for Cincinnati. And I've loved seeing its growth and its vibrancy over the past 20 years. But I started off in college up at Miami of Ohio and ended up down in Atlanta in chiropractic school, as you mentioned. And during that time, I had always worked in bars and restaurants. So while going to school, I never really knew that I was kind of learning how that industry worked all along.
Where did you work? Places that we'd recognize today still?
Every summer I'd come back. I worked for Jeff Ruby over at the Waterfront. I don't know if you remember those days.
Everybody knows the Waterfront. Those stories are legendary. I think that's another podcast, though. We'll have people come on and tell all the Waterfront stories, or we might be too family friendly for that. I don't know. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
So I sat out on the ramp and checked IDs for Las Brisas and Coconut Joe's. So I do have a lot. I could tell you a lot of stories about the Waterfront, that's for sure. But anyway, so I had always worked in bars and restaurants while going to school. And when I moved back up to Cincinnati, I had a couple college buddies that were in the bar business in Chicago at the time, and they wanted to expand and open up a place in Cincinnati. So I was knowing them and them knowing that I had worked in the business, we just partnered together on a place up in Mount Adams, and that was back in 2001.
Alive One, right?
It was called Alive One, yep. All one word.
Let's name check all your partners. Let's give a shout out to everybody because these are known people around here. So go ahead, tell us who are your partners.
So Ben Klopp and Dave Halpern, they were my college buddies. And then Dan Cronican, our fourth partner, was a childhood friend of Ben Klopp's. So that's how we all sort of ended up coming together.
That's the four and the four.
That's the four. Yes. So ultimately, we opened a Live One in Cincinnati, which the original Live One is still open in Chicago currently. So we opened up in Mount Adams, and the owner of that building also owned next door, which was the Mount Adams Pavilion, which has obviously had its history in time going way back. So those were our first two establishments. And after that, it just sort of spiraled. We ended up meeting Town Properties, and they had the sandbar out in Four Seasons Marina, which was called Tommy's on the River. We actually changed the name and started running that place. And then our fourth place was a place we bought in Mount Lookout Square, which was called One Eye Jack's, and we ended up turning that place into a place called The Stand. So once we had those four was really when it started to turn into, okay, this is going to be something longer than just a hobby or, just a couple of guys that own a bar or two. So we ended up forming 4EG at that time.
What year, Bob, was that?
That was right around 2005, 2006.
So right around the time, the beginning of the sort of the over the Rhine redevelopment process, right?
It was, because we had opened Keystone Covington, and then right then and there we were introduced to through a contact we had, we were introduced to 3CDC, and it was my first meeting with 3CDC. I think there was four or five in their office. That was it total. They were in the old Kroger building downtown, up on one of the floors when we met them. So we met them, and then our first development project was the Righteous Room, which was the old Phoenix Cafe across from the Aronoff Center.
Still open, right?
Yep. And that was really the start of – that was another sort of milestone with 4EG, where we had always – kind of gone into existing bars and done some remodeling and fixed them up. Well, this was our first sort of development project. And from then on, we've done, many more after that, but that was kind of a milestone for us to work with 3CDC on that project. And then from there, as you mentioned, it was kind of a kickoff to just a huge surge in, downtown's revitalization and just so many different things happening with, the arts and entertainment in the whole, central business district over the Rhine area.
Was there a point, if you can remember when, that you thought to yourself, downtown really is going to come back?
I do. I think once, I just remember when NADA went in downtown. It was such a big deal, it seemed like, for the city of just, we just had these chef-inspired restaurants that started popping up. And I just really, from living in Atlanta for about 5 years prior to moving up to Cincinnati, that's where I was in chiropractic school, I could just see that the city was on a great trajectory. And people, when you would talk to them downtown, would they were talking about Cincinnati in such a positive manner. You could just feel the energy and feel it coming together.
Do you feel, do you and 4EG, do you feel like
is it extra special that you've been a part of this? You've been a part of the revitalization of downtown, the redevelopment of Over the Rhine. You've partnered with 3CDC. Is it extra special in that way that you've been part of something like way bigger than a bar?
Yeah. I mean, it really has. I mean, again, for me growing up here and, you know, being a Bengals fan and a Reds fan and being downtown and seeing, you know, other cities and always wanting more for Cincinnati, it's been, you know, looking back, first of all, I can't believe how fast time flies.
It's, yeah,
you know, 20 years and looking back, but yes, taking these buildings, you know, Righteous Room, which was the old Phoenix Cafe, and then right around the corner, Igby's on 6th Street there with that, you know, we did that whole thing sort of together with David Falk. So it was, you know, Igby's went up and Soto went up and Boca and that whole sort of block. That was amazing. And then moved up into Over the Rhine. And I remember going into Over the Rhine and looking at that corner space at 13th and Vine and kind of thinking, are we crazy to do something here? But it just started coming together with the whole block there. And it was, and looking back on it, it has been really astonishing and fun.
Lachman. So that's where the Lachman is.
Yes. Yes. And I'm grateful to be a part of it. I really am. It's the people in Cincinnati, everybody we worked with, you know, outside of even 3CDC has been great.
So we're really in this movement now of the idea of like the south part of Over the Rhine has gotten all of this investment in the downtown core where Igby's is, right? So like 6th Street around the corner then where the Righteous Room is, the Aronoff, and the idea of that these places need to be connected, right? With the Liberty Street Diet, which I love calling it that. And then here we are with the Court Street Plaza. So can you talk a little bit about like being part of what's going on there?
Yes. So, again, I think, you know, connecting Over the Rhine to that central business district, I think they're, you know, where Kroger has put their new building in that entire Court Street area. I just feel like that's such a, the next area that is now being developed and coming together. And now from the banks all the way even to north of Liberty into Findlay Market area, I feel like it's just, you know, becoming so connected with its walkability, you know, increased foot traffic. So it's exciting to be involved in that Court Street Plaza.
So you have a restaurant going in there called Pilar.
Mm-hmm.
Still learning to pronounce that. I've done it like
50. You got it, right?
When they were doing the Court Street Plaza, there was talk about, like, where are people going to park? Like, we're so used to in Cincinnati, we love our cars. Like, don't take away our parking spots. And how important is that walkability of, like, it seems like it's actually a draw and not a drawback?
I think so. I think, again, the more we continue to add to, you know, making this city a walkable city, people understand that even if you do have to park a little bit further away and walk to somewhere, that it's you know, that's what other cities do all the time. So I think that it just, as the years go on and we continue to increase those things in Cincinnati, people will become used to just walking everywhere. It's amazing to, I do a lot of walking and running, and from the banks to Liberty is literally 1 mile. And when you're in bigger cities, walking a mile somewhere is not, and people just do it all the time.
I know. My best friend lives in Washington, D.C., and I'll go visit him, and he'll be like, oh, it's right around the corner, and I'll be in high heels. But we're walking like 2 miles, and I'm like, oh, it's so far. And he's right. This is just normal. Like, everyone walks everywhere there and far. They don't mind. That's just normal.
Yeah. When I met my wife, she was living in Boston. So I would fly there and to see her. We never got into her car in Boston. And we would go everywhere and walk. And it was always, it felt like over a mile for sure.
Wait, we were talking about Pilar. Am I saying that right?
I know.
Pillar.
Yep.
You say it, Bob.
Pilar.
Okay. And it's part of the new Court Street
Plaza area.
Plaza. Mm-hmm. Two things. I love the new Court Street Plaza, and I think it's really a neat thing. And two, when does Pilar open?
So this week we've got a handful of inspections, which, you know, I think will go smoothly, and we're hoping to be open by next weekend in some capacity. It might be like Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It might be Friday, Saturday, just to kind of open up softly. And then we'll probably look to have a grand opening sometime in early August.
Ernest Hemingway inspired?
So it is very, I know that's the paper quoted as kind of Hemingway inspired. It really began from us just thinking of what we wanted to create on that corner. So we're on the corner right across from the Kroger building. And much like a Lackman, we wanted to make it a nice little corner neighborhood bar. Yeah. And really come up with something that was, you know, it just felt like a lot of places were sort of opening these bourbon bars, which are fantastic, by the way. We wanted to do something a little different. So we started thinking of places that we liked down in Key West, down in the islands, a little bit lighter theme, little rum based. And so we just started talking through it, and that's where it came up with, you know, sort of the Key West Ernest Hemingway style bar that you'd walk into, and it just feel comfortable, and a bunch of different kinds of cocktails that maybe you'd get at one of those places, and just that's how the whole theme sort of developed from there.
I feel like that's going to be a nice pairing with the Court Street Lobster Bar, like right up the road there, outside of the Court Street Plaza area. And like, that is different than what we have. And I mean, we were just talking last week about the Jimmy Buffett concert. So there seems to be a crowd that will want this just from having gone to the concert. I don't know.
Yeah. But if, like I said, if anyone's ever traveled down to, you know, Key West or, you know, an island they like, and they walk in kind of a little island bar, a little Key West bar, and, you know, there's some different types of cocktails. It's just a lighter feel with the music. And so that's really where the inspiration came from. I think when you walk into and you see some of the design that we've done, hopefully that will, you know, sort of take you to those places. And that's what it's all about, the experience. You know, when people come out to dine and drink, they really want to just have an experience, you know, set aside work, set aside any, you know, personal things that are going on in their life, and just have a little bit of enjoyment.
Will it have like an open air kind of, you know, the wind, you know, open big windows open? Will that be?
In fact, the whole front will open up into that Court Street, you know, the windows will all open up into that Court Street Plaza. Right now, I'm sure you guys have heard there's been, you know, some setbacks on getting different materials and different things. So we have temporary windows in right now until our real windows come in. So we, as you mentioned about opening, we may open with we probably will be opening with our temporary windows. And that's why we kind of might wait a little bit to have sort of our grand opening where everything is 100% like we want it.
I mean, you were kind of the first with like that huge open air garage with Lachaise, right? Because didn't that open up right onto the street?
It did. Yeah,
that's the way back machine, everybody, the Lachaise.
It did. And that's, I mean, we've really tried to you know, continue to have, you know, Igby's opens up in the front. We try to create all of our bars to have some type of operable windows in front to open them up. It makes it really nice. And people can kind of connect themselves again to the street, into the establishment. Which, by the way, the streeteries have been phenomenal. That, in my opinion, that they're putting all over the city.
And you know, you guys, 4EG, were part of folks who worked really hard on getting City Hall to do that, right?
I was. I mean, it was one of those where, a lot of people worked on that, but it was a blessing. It was, first of all, it was a lifesaver during COVID, when we had the restrictions on, not really on occupancy, but when we had to distance 6 feet apart for tables and stuff. But you see a lot of cities that had those in place, even outside of COVID, and I think they've just added a really neat, they've been a really neat addition to the city and add to the charm, and how they're building those, I think really, again, makes our city different and unique.
You mentioned at the top there that you said you guys are looking at expanding into Columbus. Anything you can tell us about that? As we're part of we're part of the USA Today network in Ohio, and the Columbus Dispatch is part of our family of newspapers and news sites, and I know there's interest, certainly.
Yeah, well, when we put Roosevelt Room in up at Liberty Township Center, we had met Steiner Properties at the time, and they had us come out to Easton and take a look at some things they had out there, and ultimately led to where we opened what's called the Beeline in Easton. Yeah. And we opened in January, literally of 2020. So we were open for a couple months, had to shut down, just recently, back open to full capacity. So we've been in Easton now for over a year, but I feel like we really just opened about 60 days ago.
Yeah.
And, we love it up there. It's been going well. And since, we're up in Columbus now, we've started to, continue to look at some other opportunities of where we can, go into that market.
All right, Jason, road trip to Easton. I feel like we'll bill it to work. We'll call it research. I love it. Okay. I'm formulating a plan right now.
Yeah. So Easton, I don't know if you know, they a real quick little blip on that. They created an entire little new entertainment area, which was, I guess, back off the east side of Nordstrom back over there. So they added a bunch of different restaurants and bars and, a hotel. And so they're really kind of creating a whole new, I know Easton's huge to begin with, but this is a whole nother new section of Easton back there.
I did not know that. See? All right. That's the news I can use. I haven't been there since pre-COVID.
Yeah, you, Bob, and I know we're kind of running on time here, but I wanted to ask you a couple things you've said here that made me think of a question as well. You mentioned that you worked for Jeff Ruby back when you were a young guy, and it made me think, was there any advice that he gave you or that you picked up from him as a restaurateur to that you've carried into your successful career with 4EG?
There is. I mean, it was just amazing to watch how he would always take care of people and want all of his employees to take care of people. So it really, even though, again, I was young at the time, but I do look back and just, watch the things they did as far as, providing entertainment and providing that experience for people. That whole facility had a lot of different things going on. You had this, amazing dining experience inside the waterfront, and then you had this very outside, boater, fun environment in the outside Las Brisas area. I just watched him really take care of people from the moment you pull your car up, with the valet till you're experiencing inside. And that was what they sort of, took pride on. And obviously they have continued to this day. So that was definitely something that has carried with me.
He really did do that. And like now you hear, right? Like we're all about the experience in 20, this time in our lives, right? Like we want to spend money and get the experience. Mm-hmm. But he has been doing that since the beginning.
Right, right. Exactly. Yes, I agree.
right.
Sherry and I are looking like we Did we cover everything? Did we cover everything?
Yes. And we're thinking about all the places we want to go and drink and eat now.
Well, we're definitely growing as an organization. We're coming out of this recovery, it was very hard to discuss growth during a time when it was uncertain.
Yeah.
But we knew that, hey, we're going to get through this. And when we come out of this, by growing, it only helps all of our other employees. Because as we add these locations, we continue to promote from within, continue to hire more people, which is more jobs and for the city. And again, for me, it's, as much as we look in Columbus and some other cities as we grow, I always have a soft spot for Cincinnati and will continue to, be involved here, locally and myself personally in, as many things as I can do to help, this city stay on top.
Well, Bob, really appreciate you taking time here today and congratulations on all your success and your partners at 4EG and what you've done for the city, what you do for the city, your growth into Columbus and Chicago and your passion for Cincinnati. And I love that you're a part of helping to make this a better place to be. And I can just tell like how passionate you are. You can usually tell in an interview if someone's really passionate about something or not. And I can just tell that you are. And congratulations again on your success and appreciate you coming on with us today.
Well, I appreciate being on and I'm happy that I got to talk to you all today and look forward to meeting you guys in person.
Sounds good. We'll see you at Pilar, right?
There was one last chance.
Making sure we pronounce that right. Thanks, Bob.
Okay. All right. Thank you much.
Thanks again to Bob Deck. Great stuff from him. And just, I just have so much respect for the folks who are in the restaurant industry right now and bar industry and the folks who own them, the folks who run them, the folks who work in them. What a tough industry it is. And for Bob to talk about growth right now it's a great thing to hear. And speaking of growth and over the Rhine bars, I don't know how other way to segue this, but Sherry will provide us with our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week.
I went to a very old school experience in Over the Rhine over the weekend. I went to a bar called Ghost Baby. It is an underground bar and where you go down four flights of steps. And then it's this big.
So it's literally underground.
It is
not
it
figuratively.
Is
okay.
Literally.
Okay.
And it is, it's a bar, but it also is a stage show entertainment type of thing where you make reservations for the various acts. And I went on a night where they had swing music. And I was like, well, that's just something I haven't done in a while. I was like, I have a friend in town. What's looking around at what's to do? And it's glamorous, but you get the experience that we were just talking about. It's not just a place to go and drink. Like, you're really having an old school experience, maybe like it was back in the day in Cincinnati. But I met the person in the swing band, Matt Tolentino. And to me, this was such a Cincinnati story. He came here from Dallas 2 years ago and he put together this band and he kind of goes around and it various mix and matches with, the bass and the drums, and he puts on a show. But he moved here from Dallas and he loved our architecture. He moved to Camp Washington with his wife. He fixed up an old house and he was just, I was talking to him afterwards, obviously, extolling how much he loves Cincinnati. And, from another big city, he wants to come here and be here. And he talked just about everything Cincinnati has to offer. And it's where he wants to make his family life. And it's because of all the things that Cincinnati has, like we're easy to travel to, but he had, you know, the old architecture, it's affordable. And so to me, like that was a So Cincinnati moment of just, we are welcoming here and it's a great place to live. And he came here. And so we got to have that experience over the weekend.
Love it. Great stuff. Something new.
Ghost Baby's been there a little bit, but, you know, okay. Opened before
something
COVID.
New for you. A new experience for you.
I've been there before, but oh. but it's always a different experience because it's different kinds of acts. They have jazz. But just to have, like, a stage show like that in a small venue is really cool. Nice.
That's very cool. What street's that located on?
Republic.
Okay.
No big sign or anything.
Yeah.
A couple purple lights. But you'll find it online. You make reservations for the show part of it, or you can do a walk-in. You know what? I'm going to say one more thing about Over the Rhine over the weekend. There were lines. You drove to get there. Lines everywhere. Lines to get in every place. It was teeming with people.
Great.
And it did feel very much like we are back to normal.
Yeah. It's fantastic. It's fantastic to see lines and crowds and – even though I don't like them, it's great to see them. Yeah, I mean, people out trying to get back to normal and live their lives and enjoy life. Anyway, I'm rambling. It's time to wrap this puppy up.
Let's go write some stories.
Let's go write some stories, some columns, and we'll catch you next week. Thank you.